My name is Peter Thompson, and I'm on long-term staff here. I worked half the year in carpentry, and the other half of my time was in the Resource Center, which I started after September 11th. And back in Minneapolis, I do criminal defense and human rights work as an attorney. And so we work as a community this winter formulating some of the statements and beliefs about our response to the attacks on the World Trade Center and the war on terrorism and some of those other things. And so the session today is on just war. And in a little, what I'd like to do, if this works, I'm very much a person that likes to do interaction with the group. I'm kind of used to that from my lawyering days, because there's always give and take. And so what I'd like to do is to get some of your opinions. So I'd like to have it go like this. You've heard the title of the talk, probably. And as you know, there's been quite a bit of publicity recently about a possible attack on Iraq, either this fall or next spring. And the topic of just war is kind of an academic and a little heady kind of topic, which theologically is interesting, but probably not nearly so much so as is our present situation. But I think it's important for us as Christians to look at how our beliefs form some of our opinions as to these things. So there's a pretty nice confluence of those two things. So what I'd really like to do is have a little discussion, even though you just came in, about whether you think the war on terrorism is just. Generally, the war on terrorism that has been pronounced and carried out in at least some theaters. And then I'll go through a little historical background, do a little information on just war, and get what kind of the theologians have developed as the criteria, just so we have that. And actually, what your opinion is about just war is really going to be just fine, whatever it is, because people don't agree on whether it's a just war or not. Some of the people, and I have some background material here that I'll indicate. So both sides are really supported. It's really an opinion based upon your beliefs. And then I'd like to go back to an open kind of discussion about whether or not an attack on Iraq and probably an ensuing war that you've probably read about and heard about a little bit would, in our opinions, be the right thing to do, or would be a just war, or would be appropriate. And, you know, we get into politics, we get into religion, we get into morals and ethics, all those sorts of things. So what I've really enjoyed, particularly this summer and also last winter in leading some of these sessions, is to learn from each other and to have a real openness, and that if Holden can be a place that can really allow people to feel enough trust so that they are free to express their beliefs and opinions. So, all of you guys know there's a war on terrorism. I think it started October 6th, after the September 11th bombings. And I think the polls in the United States basically have an approval rating for President Bush's response that are very high, 85%, things like that. I'm not sure. I haven't seen a poll recently on those sort of things. the Holden opinions of those of us up here, you know, we've always been a little bit left-leaning and talk about peace a lot and things like that, so the Holden poll is probably a little different than that. But there is a diversity of views up here and has been during the winter. So I would just like to get a gauge before we start talking about the theological part of just war, about what people think about the war on terrorism. Is it something we should be doing, shouldn't be doing? Is it just? Are wars just? Is violence a solution to having been attacked in a way that happened? How do people feel generally about the war on terrorism?
I read your comments out there that are on the bulletin board, and I appreciate reading them, but I still do think the war on terrorism is just.
Great. Thanks for being willing to share that. Yes?
I did not read your comments out there, but I never feel the war is just, and I never feel violence is a solution.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm of the opinion that actions in defense of the nation are not that is justified. And so I believe in this case, and the actions in Afghanistan, you know, are just.
So you premise it somewhat on self-defense.
That's correct.
So that if you are attacked, then.
That's correct. Or if under threat to be attacked by the Al-Qaeda and similar groups in Afghanistan, I'll go as far as Afghanistan, what we're doing there.
Right.
That's just.
These are just perfect comments because some of this comes up in the theories.
I guess I'm uncomfortable calling it a war. I would rather call it going after criminals. Change the paradigm.
Right. And in terms of going after criminals, how do you feel about the use of force or not, or restrained use?
I will pass this. I realize in history there have been justified wars, but myself, I'm a pacifist, so I definitely love that.
Would not like to use violence. Yes?
I find it conflicts with two things I'm trying to teach my young children. One is if you don't like the way someone is behaving, it does not give you the right to behave in the same manner. And secondly, that it doesn't matter who starts it, it matters who stops it. So when I get into discussions like this, I feel a gut reaction toward what we're responding to, the other side of my brain thinks back to what I'm telling my children on a daily basis.
So ending the conflict and achieving a peace is important for you. It's interesting, as we've had discussions through the year, it really is pretty clear that that's where everyone wants to get. It's just that there are different ways there. There are areas, you know, military intervention is necessary to achieve peace, or that violence only begets more violence. Yes, sir.
I don't believe any war is just, but I think a war might be justifiable, and I think it would be helpful to separate those kinds of issues from just and justifiable.
Let's talk about that a little more. By justifiable,
going back to self-defense, personal safety.
Uh-huh.
There have been wars in our history that have been fought primarily for humanity, I think, not necessarily a particular cause. For example, World War II with Nazi Germany,
mm-hmm.
To me, was a justifiable response to what was happening. It's probably not just.
So in terms of any war, you think has problems because
right.
It involves taking of life and
right.
That sort of thing. But
in
an action may be justifiable in response to what has happened.
Yeah.
To you. Very good. Very
interesting.
Yes, sir.
I believe that it's horrible and never desirable, but I think that if evil... There is evil. The reality is there is evil in the world, and I think if evil is unopposed, then evil has to be opposed sometimes by force. And under those circumstances, I think it's just.
So our response so far is something that you would be comfortable with?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yes,
I agree with most of these statements about the responding to terrorism. I think that's something that needs to be done. The problem that I have is the loss of innocent civilian life. In all wars, I know it happens, and that's, I just have a tough time justifying that in any circumstance. And I don't know how you go about it any differently.
So that's a tough dichotomy to solve.
For me.
Since when there is any kind of war, there's obviously going to be some.
Correct.
Loss of innocent life.
When we talk about the just war, I think of a couple things. Another discussion I had where we talked about the end result and the need of a just war, but we also talked about the great background of what led up to that, and that if there were more pacifistic or nonviolent ways to deal with the obvious signs of the explosion that was going to happen that caused the need for the self-defense, that if we saw the warning signs leading up to it, then the just war would never have been necessary. Even World War II, there could be arguments made that there were lots of signs in many countries that responded nonviolently and didn't let Hitler's forces come in, but some waited too long. But there's, you know, looking at that immediate need, and then at some point you think, well, now it's necessary, but to think prayerfully about all the warning signs ahead of time so that we never get to that point.
On the prayerful part, we've been pretty political so far. Does anyone have, and I'll call on you next, but does anyone have, or do you have the, how your belief influences your opinion? In other words, there are texts in the gospel both ways. You know, there's some of the particularly Old Testament texts when they talk about God's vengeance and things like that, and a lot of texts from Jesus about loving your enemies and praying for those who persecute you and things like that, a pacifistic life. Are any of those, like, anyone have a thought? Yeah.
I think one of the issues for me, when you talk about justice and biblical witness, you know, the pursuit of justice in Micah, Amos, justice in this case, you look at, in terms of criminal justice, if someone commits something that's against the law, they're brought to justice and they pay a price for that. I don't have a major struggle with trying to find who's responsible for what happened and bring them to justice. I don't like the concept of just going and bombing, you know, indiscriminately to try to weed them out. But the other side that I don't think has been articulated clearly enough since September 11th is the issue of global justice and what has fueled the hatred. And that's my biggest concern as a parent of children. If we think that by rooting out the terrorists, we're going to create a safe place to raise our children, we're wrong. Because the injustices of the world, the poverty, the issues of affluence that we possess, that others do not, are always going to create feelings of like injustice on the other side, and that the pursuit of justice for me. And I hear Colin Powell talking about this, addressing global poverty, global economic issues, that if we, no child is born with a desire to hate, but they have basic human needs. And I think we need, the greatest defense in my mind would be for us to be the leader in the world to promote economic justice. And that's very biblical and would lead to a much safer environment. And those who now hate would find less fertile soil to plant future seeds of hate that would grow up and replace those who we found and killed or put in jail or whatever. There's always going to be somebody else when it's an unjust situation where they're going to follow in the martyr's footsteps, and we'll never know security. So that justice thing for me is major.
Let's keep going, but we'll come back. But let's think about those. He talked about two different things of justice, and Chris mentioned it too, that these people were criminals. I mean, and global justice. So let's go back to see how we're doing on either one of those in people's opinions, either achieving justice for the crimes that were committed against us or for addressing the underlying root causes of injustice.
Two things on what you just said. I think we're pretty maybe haughty and naive as a nation if we think that we are the ones who need to mete out justice by ourselves. There are establishments that we helped establish that are about global justice, international justice, and we are choosing as a nation to not use them, even though we helped initiate them. And since we're the ones who have been wronged now, we're stepping on and taking justice into our own hands, which we as a nation do not allow our own citizens to do. So I think that's an issue that I don't feel very comfortable with. And then historically...
So we could really call that unilateralism as opposed to multilateral action,
right,
like through the UN or whatever.
Right, right.
So that's it.
There are courts established that would take care of criminals who attack innocent people, which is basically what we're saying we're going about doing, but we're using different means. And I think also, as a country, we're very young, and we don't really know exactly what we're doing when we go into wars. Because we seem to have a problem learning from our own history and from world history. We tend to go in and create situations that are going to create unrest. We like to pit one person against another in other countries, and we fail to see the ramifications of that until it literally hits home. And yet we continue to do it. And then we become a part of that process now by entering into this war on terrorism, I think. And in my opinion, if justifiable as it may be, it's been said here a couple of times, it's really only going to stir up more hatred and more anger targeting us as Americans than finding peaceful solutions, caring for the social justice issues that surround this whole bombing issue. And I think we're pretty naive to think that war is the way to put an end to it. War seems to be what's getting us into more and more difficulties with other people.
Blake, I made you wait for a long time.
Oh, I think we need to search for justice from the people that, like from all the terrorists and the Al-Qaeda and all the terrorists that have ever been against us. But I think we need to search more for prevention from future attacks. I think that, you know, the Al-Qaeda isn't just going to stop at, you know, bombing the World Trade Center. And they're planning more stuff. We need to get to them before they can get back to us. So I think we really need to get a hold of them. That's why you can justify the war on terrorism, because it's not only, you know, just making them pay for what they did, but we're also, there's reports all the time, oh, you know, terrorist warning, and I remember a couple weeks after September 11th, there was a terrorist alert for all the bridges on the West Coast. I mean, I live in Gig Harbor, so we go across the Narrows Bridge all the time. So I think to put all of America's mind at ease, we need to really focus on prevention of a future attack. And by doing that, we need to capture the terrorists or deter the terrorists from attacking us.
President Bush talked about first strike capability and engaging in that. How do you feel about that in terms of prevention?
A first strike nuclear attack...
Well, not necessarily even nuclear.
Oh, sorry. Well, a first strike attack...
But, you know, if you talk about nuclear, too, that would be fine.
Are you going specifically against Iraq?
Not really, just because you talked about prevention. I thought that was... And this woman talked about not being passive or inactive.
I think that the American public would have a hard time dealing with the first strike attack. But I don't think we need that, since we're doing a second attack. I mean, we're doing the secondary attack, because we've already been attacked. So I don't really feel, unless we're going to first strike Iraq or a country that hasn't really done anything recently that's affected us, I don't think there's a real reason to have a first strike zone.
Good. Thanks, Blake. Yes, sir.
I think one of the things that I hear the words just and justifiable, all that, and to me it's what context you're using those words. Are we talking about our own human sinfulness? That we are think that in our sinfulness we can say that's justifiable. What I get very uncomfortable with is when some people try to use those words and say that's God's justice or it's justifiable in God's eyes, and that's where I just totally disagree. And I think that's where the arrogance of the rest of the world looks at us and says, you know, we're out of touch. We don't understand that.
What is the part you disagree with that we are claiming what God would determine would be just, so we're acting like God?
And if we can say it in context, yes, I'm a sinful person or a sinful nation, and I understand that this is not the ultimate response we want to have, I can understand, not necessarily agree with it, but I can understand people having those opinions. But I often, too often, hear a conversation with somebody last night where they were trying to use those same feelings, but trying to say that's what God wants.
It's ironic in terms of this particular conflict too, because that's what I understand the terrorists are claiming that God is on their side.
Yeah.
It would be hard to get that determination made clearly.
Yeah.
Well, that was the point that I wanted to make earlier, was this whole question of evil, and we've used the term, or not we, but our government has used the term axis of evil, and that word is so subjective, and obviously Al-Qaeda is looking at their targets as the evildoers, and they have a long list of reasons that America is the evil one, and other groups have other ideas of who are the evil ones, and I think it's extremely, it's a terribly subjective concept, and again, a naive concept for Americans to participate in that calling of names, and that to justify by using the word evil, which is completely something that comes from a perspective. There's no real accurate way of describing what is evil.
Did you want to say something?
He said exactly about what I wanted to say, but you know that kind of thinks that we aren't, you know, that we all are running around like Sex in the City and we're wild. I just had company from Sweden for 15 days, and it was really surprising. They had never been to the USA, and what they thought of the people in Minnesota and how we were just normal working people. And one was 16 years old, two 26 years old, and two 42 year old. And that they realized we're just plain normal people, and that when their television and what they see and hear, their political areas, we are painted really bad. And I think that's a big problem.
Because they hear about all our crimes and those sort of
things. Exactly. The shooting, the guns.
It's funny, probably every society has people in them, just like that one on your lap, and everyone can tell they aren't evil. So they all assume that they are not.
Yes, sir.
I think that she's making a very, very good point, and I think it's helpful in this discussion to remember that the countries where the bulk of the financing and a lot of the people who formed Al-Qaeda and these other networks came from were actually very prosperous countries. You know, even countries like Syria, Lebanon had been very prosperous. Iraq had been, especially before it started the armaments program, a very, very prosperous country. I think that there's a fundamental ideological opposition to the West that is pointed out very well in Thomas Friedman's two books. I don't know if you read From Beirut to Jerusalem and Alexis and the Olive Tree, but he talks about just the presence of Israel, the presence of the United States in the Middle East, and Western culture in general. That is really the thing that drives it. I mean, certainly what drives it at the street level is poverty and deprivation, but what drives it at the upper level is an innate clash of culture and faith.
So you look for fairly long-term struggle between Judeo-Christian culture and Islamic culture?
And fundamentalist Islamic culture, definitely.
And isn't it also in part due to the fact that there's not enough freedom to express their differences in some of those countries? They're repressed, so the way they express it is by hatred of some other group of people.
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen any clips from the Arab press. But if there is a deliberate, a very deliberate, there is a very deliberate anti-Western propaganda that is in. I heard some clips from the press in Iran, which was just amazing. You know, and it comes from the Muslim fundamentalist position. And you know, if you want to see, I think that's where you get, you know, like what life in Afghanistan was like is. That's where they're like. That's where they're headed. That's what they feel like. That was actually, you know, that's actually a desirable thing. And it is a very fundamental cultural change. And many, many of the people who were fighting for Al Qaeda actually came from very well-off families and come from well-off families and from countries that either are prosperous or were prosperous before they turned their economies into, you know, producing weapons and arms.
Anyone here feel our media is giving us a biased view, maybe negative view of Islam?
In answer, I want to first comment on this. While we are maybe getting a bad rap in certain medias around the world, we are in fact doing some pretty bad things around the world as well. And I think that I feel that I need to voice that we need to be aware of that as Americans, that our government really does some hideous things. And so in some respects, there is a reason for certain countries to lay some blame on us. We are not really doing a lot of good stuff. And, I mean, we do a lot of good stuff, but we also do a lot of pretty bad stuff. So in some regards, they're kind of justified in painting a bad picture of us. But my cousin was living in Denmark. My cousin lives in Denmark, and he was there. Actually trying to get on a plane on September 11th to come back to fly into New York City. And the Danish media, after the event, he could see via internet and whatnot what CNN and what American media was saying about the attack, but he also got to see what Danish media was doing with it. And he said there was a humongous difference between the two. Sympathy, for sure, for Americans and great sadness for what had happened, but also talking, they were much more quick to talk about what had led up to, as Julie was saying before, what had led up to this attack, what the signs were, what the unrest was all about, where I think our media did nothing. I mean, we were blameless, and I'm not saying the people who died were to blame, obviously, but America, American government, and America's operations in the world, I think, did have something to do with stirring up the hatred that was carried out on us.
I think to the media is obvious to everybody what's happening, but I would like to say something before.
Well, before that, what do you mean obvious? Because there was a good laugh here. People have very balanced opinions.
Well,
so
I mean,
you kind of know what people think about the media.
Well, I mean, it's obvious because you very seldom get the media to say something positive about what's happening in Palestine for the Palestinians. I think most of the time what's happening is the bombings are viewed as a horror, and what the Israelis are doing is not mentioned as a horror. Very seldom do you hear that the Israelis did this and it's a terrible thing which they did. But you always hear that the people, and it is a terrible thing for someone to put bombs on them and walk into children and blow themselves up. That is a horror. But it's also a horror to bury people in the rubble and the things that are happening in Palestine itself for the Palestinians, you know. That's how, can I talk about something else before you went to the media? You know, you hear a lot about fundamentalism, you hear a lot about the people at the top. But the people at the bottom have lived together many, many times, and for often at great periods, you know. Jews and Muslims have lived together, you know, in those areas. Arabs have lived together for a long, long time. And until we made this horrible situation for both parties, they got along. And I think they would get along again if we could take off this terrible eagle that sits on top of both these people, Arafat and Sharon, and get back to something that I think is very possible. And people are very cynical today about any potential for peace. But if we give the people a chance, the people that are going to live this life after we set the tone and we set the parameters, the people who are going to live it, they want peace and they want harmony and they want to live together. I think that's we shouldn't forget that, because we become very cynical sometimes. Say, well, you know, you got people like Arafat and Sharon, and what are we ever going to get? You know, and I hear that all the time now. Nobody has any hope that down the road we can have some kind of a peaceful settlement. And I think the people are ready for it. The Israelis too. I mean, they don't want to keep having their children bombed and people in the street and so forth, and Palestinians certainly don't want it. And I think the people are against that kind of thing. You know, maybe they danced in the street at certain times, but they didn't really understand what they were dancing for to begin with. You know, but I think I just attended a Luther hostel at the Philadelphia Seminary, the Lutheran Seminary, and we went to a rabbi and at a synagogue. We talked to them. We went to the Muslim temple and so forth, and we talked to their people, and they both have a very one-sided look at what's happening. You know, that one will defend itself, the rabbi would defend himself, and the Israelis. But when it really got down to it and we started talking, then they talked about the fact that the people are ready for peace. You know, I think the people are ready for peace, and if it wasn't for the egos of the people in power and some of those things, I think we could make a peace there. And I'm not cynical. You know, I think there is a real hope.
Thanks. Yes, sir.
I think that it's important to remember that it's not just our media that's biased, but our entire government is also biased. I think to call something a war against a non-governmental organization is kind of a stretch. And then to further attack a sovereign nation because you're upset with an NGO is another stretch. And I don't think that would happen if our government and our country wasn't very prejudiced against Asians and against Muslims, both. And I think that a way to point that out is 10 years ago, would anyone in our country have supported United Kingdom troops invading and bombing Ireland when the IRA was attacking England monthly? I don't think that would be very few people in the United States who would say that's a justifiable action. So is it justifiable for us to do the same thing?
Would you say, like when you said attack the sovereign nation and in pursuit of an NGO, what are you referring to?
I'm referring to invading Afghanistan to go after Al-Qaeda.
Okay.
I didn't hear that. What did he say?
He was questioning whether or not it is a war when...
Or death, but it's just...
And then he said there was an invasion of a sovereign nation, which he opposed in the name of going after an organization that wasn't, a formal state. Well, I think all the different concepts that have been raised are just about everything that is in some of these ideas about just war. And what I'd like to do is just run through the precepts that have evolved in modern times, largely through the Catholic Church, but before then from the Christian Church, to give a definition of what just war is and what some of the different criteria are. And then with that, and I'll do that very briefly because this is a rich set of opinions we have here, I'd like to look at these opinions that you've talked about, these different factors, whether or not now we could take the next step of a preemptive measure of attacking Iraq, and whether or not that would be good policy, whether it would be just war, whether it would be ethical, whether it would be Christian, if it would violate, you know, your sense of fair play, any of those things. And I've got a little luck. This may be a biased way to go at it, but there is a commentary from Sojourners, which is a left-leaning Christian magazine, and they have 10 reasons not to attack Iraq. And so I thought we could just go through those, and a lot of the people have raised a lot of those various considerations, and we could look at it in a critical way to either support or attack those particular reasons. Could you just flip on that? There's a switch right on the front. It's right up. It's up. Just a light bulb. It's the just war theory, the actual just war theory that came out of the Christian church, started in the 4th century from St. Augustine. And he really talked about three topics, and they were broadened after that. And those three topics were a right intention, that is a restoration of peace, not revenge, competent authority, that a war would be prosecuted by a state against the state, as we're talking about here, and that the cause would be just. And it was elaborated on in the 12th century by Sir Thomas Aquinas and others, and then later by two other saints called Vittoria and Suarez. And by the 12th century, they had added these other criteria. And those other criteria are basically that there would be proportionality, which is listed second there, and that really talks about that the good that would be achieved through the war would outweigh the evil that could be incurred. I guess oftentimes we call that hard feelings or collateral damage or one thing or another. And that it would be the last resort. War would be only after other means had been utilized to try and avoid the war. That there be a reasonable hope of success as to the objectives, and that there would be respect for non-combatants. And that's what I think this gentleman was talking about here, and the dilemma you always have that, you know, innocent persons would be hurt. And the way the Pentagon talks about that now, I think they always talk about collateral damage. We sort of had a classic example of collateral damage last week when there was an Afghan wedding going on, and the man ran outside, as their cultural tradition, shot their guns in the air, and I'm sure the soldiers thought that they were shooting at the planes, and so they were bombed. The Christian theory behind all of this was stated by Augustine to be peaceful, therefore, in warring, so that you may vanquish those whom you war against and bring them to the prosperity of peace. And so it really is having a Christian heart, even though you are involved in a violent behavior. And of course, the violence that we've always talked about is thou shalt not kill. And so as I read some of these background materials, it would be, the philosophy is, that in vanquishing your enemy, you would try and actually have love in your heart, but to take that person away from sin, the sin of the ways of evil, that is, doing something that was inherently evil beforehand. And the attack on the World Trade Center, I think, obviously, although evil is a very vague term, there wouldn't be anyone, I don't think, who would fight the proposition that that initiative, that attack, was an evil attack.
You refer to this as a Christian theory, but aren't most of these principles also accepted in Islam and Judaism for the most part, and coming out of the same roots with thou shalt not kill?
I haven't studied just war in terms of either Judeo or Islamic background, and that's why all the materials I found to study, most of them came out of the Catholic Church, were Christian. In the very few things that we've done this year with Judaism, and there's a rabbi up here a month ago speaking, and Islam, I think all of those religions respect life and seek peace and tranquility. And you know, you can look at some of the parts of the Bible and you can look at some of the parts of the Quran and you can find justifications for violence or war. But in terms of the Christian just war theory, whether it is acceptable to you or not, these are the different criteria. And since those criteria have been established, the Catholic Church has somewhat backed away from them. Vatican II, while not talking specifically about just war and not rejecting war, said some things. If you just look at this list, you'll hear it's fairly similar, that war is to be used after all efforts for peace have failed. The government leaders have a duty to protect their people's interests. Thirdly, that a right intention, and that is number six here, a right intention rules out force being used for political or military objectives. That is, you can't have a different agenda. The agenda has to be restoration of peace, not advancing some economic or, you know, other political thing. Four, not all is fair during war. That is, it has to be prosecuted according to the rules of war. And that indiscriminate killing, the collateral damage sort of thing, is prohibited. So that's basically the theories of just war. They don't necessarily always apply to the war on terrorism, because here we don't have two states. We have, as the gentleman up there called it, an informal organization, an NGO. But if we did have an attack on Iraq, it would be against the state. So I would like to take some of these ideas that people have expressed here and apply those to if next fall our country, our government has decided to send troops and air, and I think the anticipation, they talked last week about an attack from three different directions, and they're talking about thousands and thousands of foot soldiers and closely following a massive air attack, with the thought of trying to unseat Saddam Hussein, who by almost all accounts is, seems to me probably psychotic would be a fair word, and to destroy the weapons of mass destruction that may be under their control. I'd like to hear what people think about that, which would be the next step. And I'd like to go through these 10 different points. I think it would be, because it's things we've almost talked about already in terms of the war on terrorism, but now talk about it in terms of Iraq. And now this is a biased paper, because it's basically saying we shouldn't. And so I don't want to follow that. But each of these points have some of the points that we've already talked about. Is everyone okay with turning the light back on? Do you have a sense of that there? And I thought we'd just pass this around and why don't you read number one? This is number one reason for not attacking Iraq, and then let's analyze it. Let's not accept it, but let's talk about the strong parts or the weak parts, because the things people have said here right now, I think, are all of the different theories that we can apply to these ideas.
There is no justification for war. Iraq has not attacked or threatened the United States. It has not been implicated in the attacks of September 11th. There is no cause of bella.
That is just cause. The just cause that everyone particularly agreed with. In other words, this is maybe just let me go back. just cause here is one of the commentators went through and wrote a whole article about the fact that what everyone is calling a just war on Al-Qaeda isn't necessarily just war, because just war has all these. What they're really talking about is that we had just cause, one of the things. And that's just what she read in number one, that because they weren't the people that bombed the World Trade Center, that the first prerequisite, just cause, does not exist, because they haven't been tied to that particular act.
Does that assume then that to have a just cause, you need to be on the defensive? We kind of skimmed it a little bit when you asked about the first attack, and that's just a question, because
right.
that to me that's what that sounds like, is wait until they do something and then you might have a just cause. If we know, as we at least as we've read and heard, that they may well be developing weapons that could cause problems and could be used against us, does that give a cause that you can consider to be just to go in and eliminate it before it's used against us?
My response to that is, if you believe it is, it is. In other words, I don't want to be wed to the legalism of these criteria. I just want that as a background for our opinions as Christians, saying, you know, would that be just cause? In other words, would that be a factor on which you would, how do you feel about that? I mean, in other words, if they hadn't taken an action, like this point mentions, and there is intelligence from the CIA or whatever that there are manufacture of weapons of mass destruction, what action or inaction do you think we should take on that? Maybe she could answer that first.
Well, I would say if we have that intelligence and we felt it was there, and you know, I kind of go through everything else on this list, I also am not one who wants to see innocent lives taken either on either side. And I would say that there could be a case for an attack on Iraq.
Yes, sir.
Is it just cause if it's, I mean, is it the action? Do you have to have an action against, and this is reiterating, against, say, the United States, or is just cause something like the Holocaust that happened? And this is what someone of my age is looking at. Do we have a just cause of evil in Iraq? We have children starving in Iraq. We are part of that recovery because of our blockade. But do we have a cause to uproot this at all, because this is a greater evil? And that's, you know, I'm struggling with this, as everybody else probably is. But is it necessarily an action against me and my folks that qualifies as a just cause?
I think, you know, again, what our administration's actions are going to be is won't be controlled by seven particular theological points. And so what your response is going to be, either against it or in favor of it, is what's important. And so I don't want to get hung up about these, but the traditional Christian thing is it would be in defense of, you know, your person, not your property, but it would be a defensive, like self-defense mechanism rather than.
And then I guess my question is, versus our responsibility or whatever, however poorly put together, Where do we need to step in? In some place in a sovereign nation. And that's where I'm struggling. Maybe she can.
Personally, I have a tough time making a agreement that our government should make a preemptive attack on Iraq. If I knew that with our capability they are going, we're going to, you know, attack and inflict harm on our country, then with that knowledge, certain knowledge, I would be in favor of that. But without that certain knowledge, I would have a tough time supporting the action. There are lots of unsavory countries out there, or countries that have similar capabilities. So which ones? I mean, which ones are going to take action against?
Yes.
I would like to have our second reader read number 5 here, because it ties into exactly what you just said. Nice and loud, so everyone can hear.
Number 5. War could prompt the very use of weapons of mass destruction that the administration seeks to prevent. If pressed to the wall by a U.S. attack, Saddam Hussein might use whatever weapons he possesses, probably chemical or biological weapons, against the only targets he can hit, Israel or the advancing U.S. troops.
Yeah. I don't know how applicable this is right at this part of the argument, but this, the whole just war list here was kind of created in times when war was fought in a pretty different way. And so when we start talking about biological and nuclear warfare, the whole just cause thing, the proportionality, a lot of those things kind of get wiped out because, you know, one push of one button, kind of, that's just it. That's the end of it. And
there was a one further refinement the Catholic Church did, and actually the Pope came out with something on proportionality. It was after the Gulf War, and they found that Gulf War was not a just war because of proportionality, because, you know, the bombs are so big now and create so much collateral damage, and so many people are hurt that it's impossible to respect non-combatants because of the infrastructure and the personal damage is so extensive. So that is one thing that ties into what you're saying, and that isn't getting the new code.
And so the just cause thing now is not just did they attack us first, because if we do wait until they attack us first, and in this case with Iraq, we push them and then they do decide to attack us first, then we're just done. There is no response to that kind of an attack because we're gone.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to make a distinction. I think I don't believe that we're justified in attacking Iraq itself. And part of it has to do with it. I think it's not just. I think you have to have a principle that you could apply to more than one situation. There are many countries who have evil intent toward the United States who also have biological, chemical, and are working on nuclear weapons. I think what's missing right now from Iraq is a direct intent. I think the more you can demonstrate that somebody is eminently ready to attack you, the more I think that is the justification for preemptive war. But I think that in terms of justice of the cause, I think the one argument I could pose, I don't think it's enough, but that is that I've read, there's a great biography of Hussein, the excerpts of it were published in Atlantic Monthly, but that is that his own people are suffering terribly, and particularly the Kurds and the Shiite Muslims. And I think that if you wanted to formulate a justification, that is one possible justification, although I don't think it's enough.
Could I pose a question right here? If you have good evidence someone is going to attack you, if that gives you the right to do a preventive strike, wouldn't Iraq right now have a right to attack us?
Yes.
Because, I mean, we have that Pentagon memo that came out a couple weeks ago, and there's a specific plan of attack. So unless you have tougher preconditions, anytime, then anyone could be attacking anyone. Liz, did you have your hand up? Did I miss you? Okay, Blakey, go ahead.
Saddam Hussein scares me because, first of all, he's a psychopath. He's a sociopath. If he attacked us, I don't think he would care. I think the only thing that would matter to him is that if we wiped out Iraq, he wouldn't have anybody to govern over anymore. He would lose that power. Iraq right now, we don't really know what kind of resources the Al-Qaeda have. We know that Iraq has the resources to make weapons of mass destruction. We know that they have people thought that Iraq was responsible, was responsible for the September 11th attacks because they had the resources to train all the pilots. They had the resources to give in. They just had that depth. They had the money depth. They had everything that they needed, really, to do that. And a lot of, you know, analysts thought that Iraq is actually responsible. But I just feel that if we can get Hussein out of power, I think that would help a lot of in Iraq. And I think, yeah, there will be some collateral damage, but I think in the worldly view of everything, I think it would be a lot better. Plus, if we can capture Saddam Hussein, I mean, Saddam Hussein is on the same level as Milosevic is. I mean, we can try him for crimes against humanity. He gassed his own people. He doesn't care about his own people. And I think that he's using that collateral damage to deter us from coming in and dethroning him.
As a Christian, what is collateral damage? It's human, it's children of God. How many people can you say is justifiable?
None.
The military leaders are getting their food and their medication and whatever. And there might be an uprising from the people, grassroots, if they were strong enough to rise up against him. But we're taking that strength away as well.
And this is simplistic, but I mean, like, something between 20%, 25% of American children go to bed that hungry every night. So does that mean our Bush, our leader, should be taken out?
Let's read number two.
A military campaign.
If you've got something, you know, like fire or something, go ahead. We'll quit. This is going to take a little bit. We're just at time now. So, but when the bell rings, it's dinner. So we'll go up for that. At least we won't be starved out.
A military campaign against Iraq that killed thousands of innocent victims, inflicting further torment on a civilian population that has already suffered severely from more than 11 years of sanctions.
Okay, we've been talking. Yeah, why don't you do number three then?
War and its aftermath have cost the United States tens of billions of dollars. The campaign against Afghanistan reportedly cost almost $2 billion a month. An attack against Iraq would be much larger with proportionately greater costs.
How do people feel about dollars on this thing? Is it an issue? I know I saw that before we had the military appropriations for the war on terrorism, we were spending more money on defense and weaponry than the next seven nations combined altogether. So we're basically spending, now that we put in all these appropriations for war on terrorism, we're spending as much money on military as the rest of the world, maybe more.
Our military budget is twice NATO's. Twice NATO's. Or, sorry, twice the UN's.
Anyone want to say anything about the dollars?
Well, just in the dollars, our aid to help either developing countries or our own children is at the bottom of the list. There's just every other developed country is way, I don't remember all the statistics, but it's just pitiful.
Well, every one of your congresspeople voted for it. It was unanimous that 440-some, you know, whatever it was in October, it was a carte blanche. What's the next one? Maybe, yeah.
Number four?
Yeah.
The military overthrow of Saddam Hussein would require U.S. forces to occupy Iraq in hostile circumstances for a prolonged period of time.
So we have body bags coming home, right?
I think this is probably the best argument, because the difficulty in Iraq right now is there are at least three very large power blocks that are just barely being held together. That's the Kurds, the Shiites, and then the bulk of the country. And I think that's actually why they didn't take him out in the first Gulf War, is that I think the best circumstance is actually to have Hussein in power, but to have his claws drawn to some degree, because there is the possibility of the Shiites who live in Iran are going to be, I mean, in Iraq are going to be attracted to Iran. That's a very politically, that's politically destabilizing, as are the Kurds who live in Iraq also are attracted, you know, have a bond with the Kurds in Turkey. But it would be a hugely politically unstable situation if he was gone.
I just want to ask what the rationale for the invasion of Iraq is. Is it, in fact, to topple Saddam Hussein? And if that's the case, shouldn't it be the Iraqi people who decide themselves? Why is the U.S. unilaterally, and I believe it's unilaterally, deciding that they're going to... And I'm not an American, I'm a Canadian, I'm doing this from the outside. And I have great respect for the U.S., I have great respect for the things that the U.S. has done, but I'm looking at it from a different point of view.
But you wouldn't attack the United States to unseat George Bush if you didn't like his policies.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
You wouldn't be in favor of Canada attacking the United States if you wanted to change our policies?
No, I agree. I mean, the U.S. has weapons of mass destruction. Why doesn't Britain just attack the U.S. to eliminate the weapons of mass destruction? As you say, if they don't like George Bush, why not attack the U.S.? I don't know. As a Canadian, I support many of the things the U.S. does, not necessarily everything.
I go back to the international courts. If we have a problem with a leader in a country and we're afraid for the people of that country, and I see a lot of parallels between Afghanistan and the Taliban and what we're talking about with Iraq and Hussein, the people who are starving and oppressed and all of this, and there's a ruling person or a group of people who are in charge of all of that, and I don't know exactly where to go with that, but there was a lot of talk right after September 11th, why didn't we go in and help the Afghani people overthrow their own government and establish that as an international thing rather than the U.S. unilaterally doing it? Why don't we, if Iraq is really a problem and Hussein is the major threat, why don't we as an international people go in and assist with food and medication and whatever else assistance we can give to create a people who are strong and powerful and who can say, this is not the man we want ruling our country, and we don't want this man in charge of our weapons, and we will take care of throwing him out, and then we can be in charge of establishing the next government that comes in. I don't understand why that.
Let's do number 7. There's two.
Well, I just have a comment on that.
Oh, okay.
The thing, I think if Saddam Hussein ever got the hint that that was going to happen, I don't think he would have a problem gassing his own people again. I think his people are in a lot of fear that, you know, that he's going to kill them all. I mean,
he's done it before.
Not only that, but you're talking about a guy who strategically killed parts of his family to be
right.
in power.
Yeah.
There's something that an overlay of all this, and that is the fact that we armed Hussein.
Yeah.
We sent, when they were fighting Iran, we sent them computers, and we gave them there is a capacity to do weapons of mass destruction. We gave it to them.
Well, they said
even up to the last day, before they invaded Kuwait, we're still sending them computers. And so we have the responsibility, and that's because we're the number one exporter in the world of arms. And it often comes back to haunt us.
Well, the Taliban were shooting.
Yeah, they were also
rockets. Yeah, it's our own rockets.
So there's something that covers this that, you know, we shouldn't be so self-righteous because we have caused so many of these situations to fester to the point where they're a problem for us.
The proposed war would stir further anti-American hatred, especially in Islamic nations. It would strengthen the forces of political extremism and lead to new suicide bombings against the United States and Israel.
Yep.
I think the answer to this one, my response to this one kind of answers her previous question. So again, well, the United States is totally misreading the situation. I think the reason why we're against Saddam Hussein is because he's the only Arab who's standing up against the United States and the rest of the Middle East are looking to him as somebody that say he can stand up to them, so can we. And so we think we can cut off his head, but they'll all be quiet. It's so ridiculous.
You think we'll create a martyr?
Oh, yeah, we'll just be building.
and the markers.
I think we just got a couple in here, and we can talk to you.
Next one.
Where are we on? Eight?
Eight.
Eight.
Attacking Iraq would undermine the international cooperation needed to prosecute and block the funding of al-Qaeda and other terrorist networks. Washington might win the battle against Iraq, but lose the war against terrorism.
This is, we're getting back now to justice for the criminals. That you realize nothing has happened? I mean, there are a couple, this one guy learned to fly an airplane without landing it, who's on trial, who's crazy as a coot. And, but there's hasn't been a warrant outstanding yet. I mean, it's been, what, 8 months ago? And we were too busy to go get a warrant. But, Chris, you were saying that they could be prosecuted. There's two things in that thing. Number one, there could be criminal prosecutions. Someone's mentioned Milosevic. And the other is there could be action taken to block the funding. These would both be legal justice kinds of things. Is that what you had in mind, Chris, when you were talking about...
But I like you said, in terms of utilizing the international structures that are in place for achieving that, because that justice.
A multinational.
Yeah,
approach.
Multinational ourselves as well as.
Well,
the blockade for arms isn't working in Iraq. There are nations that are sending stuff into Iraq continuously, especially Arab nations. And if we wanted cooperation from our Arab friends, quote unquote, we've got to. If we attack, we're going to lose that friendship, whatever's left of it. And I think what we have to demand, if they want to continue to get our aid, and they constantly get fighter planes, et cetera, et cetera, then we have to make sure that they will toe the line as far as getting arms into Iraq, because they're going on all the time. If you just follow the papers, you hear from, a lot of these countries are sending arms against the trying to block that. And the United States can be more demanding that, not for food, but for arms, that no arms get into Iraq. They can't exist by themselves. They don't have the capacity to produce these things that we think they're going to produce. You know, we blame them for the what's the drug that was in the postal part of that? Yeah, we blame them. The first thing we said, Iraq is the cause. And then we found out it wasn't right. That was wrong. But we are building up an animosity that's way beyond for the American people against Iraq. That's what we're trying to do by doing this, is to get to the point where people say, well, that's the last choice. We have to invade them because he's so awful. Well, there's a lot of awful people in this world.
Okay.
Meyer.
That's okay.
I think the hardest thing for me to take about any discussion of international military is what you brought up, or maybe it was you, Peter, saying that we are the number one exporter of arms. It's in our economic interest, and it's hard to even say, it's in our economic interest to have militarized societies around the world that we can sell arms to. That's the fundamental problem, that we, standing as the top of the food chain, if that's how we want to put it, or this is the number one economic power, the number one military power, the number one example of democracy and liberty and all the other fun words. And yet, what we really are is a militaristic society. We export it, and it's a major part of our economy. Everything from the actual arms to the fossil fuels that make them go, to the technology and science that we invest heavily in to come up with new and better ways to kill one another, and then we can sell it. And then we also want to find out the best ways to heal people, but only those sorts of illnesses which fetch the best dollars from the right people. That's the fundamental issue. And maybe it's a bigger issue than this discussion, but everything else is sort of like just moves on a chessboard that are meaningless.
So you think
the game is the problem.
Economics is driving a lot of this.
Absolutely.
So if they say, one of the things they said, military or economic objectives was not part of the justification. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. The point that was being made that we could, you know, withhold arms instead of food. Yeah, we can't withhold arms because our government will never be allowed to withhold arms because of the powers behind, because of the industrial, technological, business powers behind our government that says, no. It's too costly.
Anyone want to respond to that?
I guess my question might be on that. Do you agree with me there? The military industrial complex from 1960s or whatever. Are we necessarily destabilizing by the export of the arms, or are we attempting to stabilize? And this is taking the opposite, just taking the opposite tack. But if we did not ship arms to Israel, would it change the situation? If we did not support somebody in Iraq, whether it be the Sunnis or Saddam, would it change? You know, sometimes we have to make a horrible choice. And why did we make that choice? Was it economies? Or was it a moral imperative? With the swords and plowshares in the 30s, and it came back to bite in a different way. That's not really a good parallel for what we're talking about. But where are we going with this? How do we react? How do we change it? Is it necessarily a military industrial complex? Or is it part of the moral imperatives we have in the rest of the world? Or do we have that? Do we have the right to topple Saddam? If he is he a greater evil than the evil of toppling him? The questions that we're running around here, it's really tough.
It's a hard question. Would you read the last two, Blakey? I think we're on 9 and... Let's read 9 and 10, because the bell's going to ring in a minute.
An unprovoked attack against Iraq would set a dangerous precedent of preemptive war that would undermine the very foundations of international security.
That's what we talked about, the preemptive, the first strike.
War against Iraq would make the United States an outlaw nation. It would violate the UN Charter and the principles of international law and lead to further weakening of the United Nations.
Yeah, we've talked about that multilateralism. And, you know, I would like to pose one other question. I don't know all the names, but someone over here talked about pacifism as being passive. In other words, like in World War II, before World War II, there were a lot of signs and no one did anything. If Jesus were alive today and this was on the horizon, we were going to attack Iraq, what do you think he would be, passive or active? And if so, what would be some of the alternatives as a pacifist that someone like that could take?
Active but not violent. And so the active, deliberate work towards peace can be very not violent. And talking, writing to your congresspeople, educating about the situation, working to balance the side of the media so that that people understand the full picture of what's happening. I wasn't arguing for being passive,
right.
but not anything.
Yeah, I wanted that to get clear. I think Gandhi called it
very
the
aggressive about,
so.
But nonviolent.
Right. Active nonviolence as opposed to just being passive and not doing anything.
Walter Wing talks about the third way of Jesus. In other words, not be violently and not be passive by saying, I don't do anything. You can kill my wife, I won't touch you, you know. But he talks about a third way, which is resistance without violence. I mean, that's what Gandhi did, that's what Salt March. He was not violent, but that violence was oppressed on him, and the world reacted to that.
Gerhard was one of my clients, and he did some active nonviolence and served some time for it, and he's going to talk about that during his sessions this week down at Army School of Emergency. But there are a lot of initiatives that, you know, if someone like a Christ figure went to Baghdad and camped out there, that could have a huge impact, and it would take tremendous courage, and it would be very active. Thank you very much. You had wonderful ideas and inputs, and I appreciate it. These are obviously tough questions.
I just wanted, could we close with a prayer?
Would someone like to lead us in prayer? Okay, I'll give it a try.
You'll do fine. We'll pray for you.
Speak with the Spirit. Dear God, as we look for ways for peace, and we all are headed toward the same thing, please fill us with your Spirit and your guidance. We don't know which path to take. We're confused and we're scared. Help us to listen to you, oftentimes by just remaining silent. Help us to find peace in our own lives. Help us to find peace in our own hearts. And then help us to have the courage to speak and act upon those beliefs. Amen.
Thank you.